My subject tonight is an extremely controversial one, and I have given it the title, Hypnosis and Acupuncture. I would like to turn in my Bible and read the first case in the history of the human family of hypnosis. It was in the Garden of Eden, and I read as follows from the book of Genesis. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made, and he said to the woman, "Yea, hath God said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" And the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die." And the serpent said to the woman, "You shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day you eat thereof, that your eyes shall be opened, that you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." And the woman, when she saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree to be desired, to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof, and did eat, and gave also to her husband with her, and he did eat. I'm going to make reference to this passage again in the course of our message tonight. This is the first example of hypnosis, as we're going to see. The fall of the human race began with hypnosis, and the final collapse of the human family will end in hypnosis. And in a sense, everything between that is what is involved in the history of the world. And I am convinced, as I'm sure you are, that we are approaching the close of this time. Now, it is needless for me to say that I'm not a medical doctor. I have never made an extensive study of physiology, so I certainly can't present myself as an expert in that field. Neither am I a hypnotist, nor do I intend to become one. However, in the last few months, about the last 4 or 5, I've done considerable research in the field of acupuncture and hypnosis. I've read many articles in the Journal of the American Medical Association, the Journal of the American Psychiatric Association, as well as probably dozens of articles that have been written in the more popular magazines that are circulated around the newsstands. Also, with some care, I've read a number of books on this subject, the subject of acupuncture, the subject of hypnosis. And I've gone through these books quite carefully, and therefore tonight I come to you as a reasonably knowledgeable layman. I come to you as a concerned pastor as well. I don't think I know it all. I don't think anybody does. I lay no claim to infallibility. But in all counts, out of the results of my study, has grown a genuine concern that is continuing to grow, a growing concern from day to day. And it is this concern and the reasons for the concern that I'm going to share these things with you tonight. Now, why then my interest in hypnosis and acupuncture? There are a lot of reasons for that interest, more than one of them. But I can say it this way, at least to start out with, that I live in this world, and I'm therefore not immune to all of the ideas that the human family is being bombarded with on all sides, overwhelming, interesting information about the dramatic effects of acupuncture on the treatment of human ailments. I'm told that it is also an extremely effective analgesic, meaning it gives relief from pain. Hypnotism, too, is coming into a renewed acceptance. It's widely used in dentistry. It is widely used in childbirth. It's being used even for major surgery. I read in my wide reading that hypnotic analgesia is even superior in many ways to chemoanesthesia, inasmuch as it doesn't leave the after effects that are oftentimes common to conventional methods. Now, what am I going to do here this evening? I'm going to tell you precisely what I shall do. In order to make a maximum use of our time, I'm not going to bore you with too many credit lines. If anybody wants more specific information about my sources, I'll be glad to give them to you after the meeting. There are, however, two men that I want to introduce to you right now because of their stature in this field. I'm going to refer to them quite repeatedly later. There's Dr. Patrick D. Wall, who was formerly the professor of biology at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Mass. It is considered by many to be the most highly sophisticated technical school in the world, and therefore this man has some credentials. But beyond this, while he was connected with Massachusetts Institute of Technology in 1965, that Dr. Wall is now head of the Cerebral Functions Unit of University College, London, England. Dr. Wall is a world-renowned and distinguished neurophysiologist. He spent a lifetime in studying the mechanism of pain. The other author to whom I shall refer because of his extensive writing in the AMA Journal and the Journal of the American Psychiatric Society is Dr. William Kroger. Dr. Kroger is a surgeon, he's a psychiatrist, he's a practicing hypnotist. He incorporates hypnotism extensively in his psychiatric work. Dr. Kroger is currently executive director of the Institute for Comprehensive Medicine. His office is in Beverly Hills, California. And he writes, when I read from Dr. Kroger or quote from him, he is speaking from the vantage point of 40 years of experience in the field of hypnosis. My material tonight is going to be divided into seven sections. Number one, I'm going to make a survey of acupuncture, or acupuncture, however you want to say it. I'm going to make a survey of hypnosis. I'm going to set forth the Bible and the Spirit of Prophecy guidelines in regard to this. I'm also going to make a comparative analysis in between the Spirit of Prophecy and acupuncture and hypnosis. I'm going to make some preliminary conclusions. I'm going to hazard some extrapolation, that is, a bit of prediction as to what's going to take place, and I'm going to make, in finality, some moral observations. With astonishing speed, acupuncture has become the most exciting and the most controversial medical tool that's currently available to medical doctors. Only recently, not too long ago, 1962, thereabouts, those who advocated, in the United States at least, who advocated these strange oriental forms of medicine were being laughed at. Now they're being listened to. If there was a group of men in any science or discipline, any group of men who are suspicious of quackery or nostrums, it is the men in the medical field. In spite of the innate conservatism in the attitude of many physicians and surgeons alike, the attitude toward acupuncture has been changing from ridicule to a state of investigation, and finally, in many, many cases, to a condition of excited acceptance. All of this change has come about in the attitude in the medical ministry of the nation, for only one reason, and that is, acupuncture appears to work. It is succeeding. It has gained an acceptance because people say it works. And how can you quarrel, as someone has said, with success? Yet, there is an element of bewilderment about acupuncture. There is a universal search, it's still going on, for a scientific, physiological, or neurological answer as to why acupuncture works. Many ideas have been advanced as to why it works. One by one, these ideas, most of them, have been discarded as scientifically untenable. And yet there is a continuing search. At this point in time, it is conceded in medical circles that no one, underscore, no one, has come up with a coercive explanation as to why acupuncture works. That is, an explanation that is so overwhelmingly provable that a man would be a fool not to say, this is it, unquestionably. Now, there seems to be one point of agreement accepted by almost all knowledgeable people, that in many cases, not all, in many diseases, not all, and with many people, not all, it does work. Now let's look at the quandary of acupuncture in terms of what we are as Adventists here tonight. What is acupuncture anyway? It's an ancient system of healing art consisting of the insertion of needles, because acu is the Latin word for needle, and puncture, you all know, you can understand that, no question there. These needles are inserted in one or more of the 12 meridians in the body, quotes meridians. These 12 meridians are representing the 12 months of the year. Along these 12 meridial systems, if I may call them that, if they existed, there are 365 points in which the needles can be inserted, and these correspond to the number of days in the year. Each location within the meridians represents an exterior connection to an internal organ, like a wiring system, kind of like a telephone switchboard, in which the plugs or the holes are on the outside of the board leading into the internal works of a communication system, which might make a fitting analogy. The insertion of these needles into these acupuncture points is affected by atmospheric conditions, is affected by the phases of the moon, they say. Now, I'm talking about the old-fashioned type of Chinese acupuncture, because acupuncture is a Chinese system. It has existed in other cultures, but for the most part, it has found its most highly developed state within China. And the position of the moon has its effect, they say, we are told, upon the results as to whether it's going to be effective. The practitioners of acupuncture begin by diagnosing which organ of the body is the seat of the patient's trouble. Then they select the appropriate meridian and the points on the skin by which the affected organ may be influenced. The needles are inserted at those chosen points. The choice of the correct point and the precision with which the needle is inserted, we are told, is absolutely crucial as to its benefit. For a long time, wild claims of great therapeutic success have filtered out from under the pieces of the bamboo curtain. Naturally, in the past, Western doctors rejected the entire method. There's one conclusion that I must draw here that is obvious, I think, to those of you who are following along quite carefully. That the origins of acupuncture, the origins now, the roots of it, are deep within astrology. 365 points, 12 meridians, the 12 months of the year, and the atmospheric conditions and the phases of the moon. It is obvious that acupuncture has its origins deep within astrology. And for an Adventist Christian, this association, in the light of what we find about astrology in this book, is a conservative, incriminating piece of evidence. In the books that I have read about acupuncture, and I have a number of them with me, I read a quotation from one of them. The meridians, and I must tell you why I'm going to read this, Because acupuncture has its roots also deep within evolution. The meridians of acupuncture represent the connections that were present between the various portions of the cells before they became parts of the human being. In another more scientific sense, the acupuncturist treats the internal organs by pricking the points on the skin that were once vitally associated with them. Now, what does all this mean? It simply means that in the evolutionary development of the human body, that at one time these exterior points were extremely important with relationship to the inner organs, but as we have climbed the evolutionary tree, the external points have assumed less importance. Nevertheless, they're still there. And by plugging in to these exterior points that were essential in the development of the internal organs, we're able thereby, without surgery, without the opening of the body, and even without medication, we're able to stimulate, either to increase or decrease the activity of that organ, depending upon the philosophy of the therapist. So, the idea of evolution is essential to the concept that the vestigial remnants of internal organs are still out there on the skin. I'm still giving you background history. The origins of acupuncture are atheistic, and they are also pantheistic. I quote as follows. Speaking about the Chinese physician, the entire universe, he feels, works in such a precise, orderly fashion that it contains no mysteries beyond his scope of understanding. This is not arrogance, but a rich feeling of association between man and nature. Man is a creature of nature, not of God. Now hear this, because this is the punchline. Because no supreme power, no Lord of hosts created the world. The forces behind life and death and illness and health are not beyond man's comprehension. They are in the form of chi, present in every living creature, every tree and flower, every puff of wind and drop of rain. Now, this paragraph, which I have just read, categorically denies the personality of God. And it asserts pantheism that God is in everything. He's in every puff of wind. He's in every drop of rain. He's in every flower. He's in every leaf. And that's what you call pantheism. God is in everything and denies the personality of God. Now, what is the Chinese philosophy of disease? Inasmuch as we're dealing with a Chinese science, a so-called science. Qi is what the Chinese call the motivating force behind life. All matter, now get this, all matter is made of yin and yang, including every part of the human body. Illnesses are either yin or yang. Qi flows into the body at birth and leaves at death. During a person's lifetime, it flows in a specific and continuous pattern in the forms of yin and yang. Qi does not inhabit the body at random, although it is present throughout the organism. Instead, it flows inside a system of channels called meridians that extend into the arms and legs and around the torso beneath the surface of the skin. These meridians are not the vessels of the circulatory system that carry blood. They are not the nerves of the body familiar to Western medicine. Now what happened when all of this philosophy about what's going on here in the human body, that the thing that makes man sick, they say, is that the yin and the yang get out of balance. And you can treat a disease. Some diseases are yin, some diseases are yang. And if the two are out of balance, you can either lower the yin or raise the yang and get them into balance, and then everybody's fine. This is the basic philosophy. The Western medical world laughed at all these philosophical justifications for acupuncture therapy. The reason that they laughed was a close examination of the human body in dissection, in autopsy, revealed no such meridians. They didn't exist. As far as the West was concerned, these meridians were a huge package of Chinese folklore. But the insertion of the needles, regardless of whether there were any meridians or not, seemed to have precisely the effect upon the body that the Chinese said they were supposed to have. The fact that the insertion of these needles did work bewildered the scientific minds of the Western world. Naturally, the scientific brains of the Western world were going to discard all of this folklore. And there came a feeling like this. We discard the yin and the yang, and we discard this and that and the other. We discard everything that to us is in our mentality is ridiculous. But let's keep what's good and discard the bad. So while Western men rejected the Chinese folklore, many theories were advanced which attempted to explain the results of acupuncture in the context of Western medicine. What appeared to be the most plausible explanation as to why the insertion of these needles work was made in 1965 by Dr. Melzack, who is professor of psychology at McGill University in Montreal, and by this Dr. Patrick Wall, to whom I referred earlier, who was at that time connected with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. The explanation they made was like this. The reason that the insertion of the needles has an effect is because of the nerve-gate theory, nerve-gate theory. In simple terms, let me put it this way. They proposed that the insertion of the needles opened a gate in the sensory nerves, and because it opened a gate, it prevented the transmission of the feelings of pain. It was along this line that Dr. Wall worked for 7 years. And then, in July of 72, after 7 years on the nerve gate theory, he published his conclusion that his own theory of acupuncture and pain, that the theory that he fathered was not tenable scientifically, that there was no basis really, too many objections, too many things that didn't fit. He discarded the nerve gate theory and came to the following conclusion. He said, "My own conclusion is that acupuncture is an effective use of hypnosis." Now it's significant that the man who fathered the nerve gate theory rejected it. In view of his extensive experience, his conclusion that acupuncture is hypnosis is a serious thing. I call your attention again to the fact that Dr. Wall is a world-distinguished neurologist. He spent his lifetime specializing in the study of the mechanism of pain. Now, with Dr. Wall's words and his conclusion that acupuncture is hypnosis, we find as follows. That in the debate and the search for an explanation of why acupuncture works, there is a rising tide of non-Adventist medical people who are stating without equivocation that acupuncture is a form of hypnosis. They are concluding that acupuncture cannot be explained neurologically or physically, that the explanation is not in the realm of the body at all, that it is only in the realm of the mind. And those who make these assertions are not charlatans. As we've already observed, they have impeccable medical credentials. On the other side, there are those who are well acquainted with acupuncture who vigorously deny that it is hypnosis.
in all counts, if we were to put it all together, the debate can be summarized by asking one question. Is acupuncture hypnosis? Yes or no? What is it? Now, while it is true that an individual is not always guilty by association, I want to bring something to your attention, because we can't totally overlook the following fact. In early July 1973, that's less than a year ago, at the world's largest convention resort hotel on the island of Oahu, Hawaii, what was advertised as the most complete week-long course in medical acupuncture was presented by the American Institute of Hypnosis. Complete package, needles and all. The faculty at the American Institute of Hypnosis were all medical doctors with credit lines and credentials a paragraph long. They were distinguished physicians. And it was under the auspices of the American Institute of Hypnosis that they presented the course on acupuncture. Could this be? Could this say something to us tonight? Could there be a guilt by association that the idea that acupuncture is hypnotism? Could that be a valid stand? Now I'm going to give you the opinion of a distinguished psychiatrist whom I mentioned, Dr. William Kroger. Dr. Kroger, after 40 years of performing relatively painless surgery, major and minor obstetrical and surgical procedure, under hypnoanesthesia. In other words, you understand. I don't think I need to give a definition for that. In other words, the individual is put into a state of not having feeling, at least feeling pain, only by means of hypnosis. He has performed major and minor obstetrical and surgical procedures for 40 years under hypnoanesthesia. And Dr. Kroger comes forth with this information, that there is no discernible difference in the behavior of those being operated under acupunctural analgesia and those that are under hypnosis. And he therefore concludes as follows, and I quote Dr. Kroger, "Its success can be explained," speaking about the success of acupuncture, "within the context of contemporary conditioning theories involving the acme of the placebo response, hypnosis. Acupunctural analgesia and hypnoanesthesia are the same. In both, a conviction that pain relief will occur from the respective methods used leads to the pain relief. It is based upon expectancy." I have something here, a bit of very interesting wording from this, by the way, the article that I'm quoting from is not from the Philadelphia Tatler. It's from the American Journal of Psychiatry in August of 73. "These compound the sensory spiral of belief into conviction. This is programmed faith. People are taught to believe, or they believe by faith, and they get the results." Programmed faith. I'd never heard that expression before. So we'll set that one to one side. Dr. Kroger does not reject acupuncture. He doesn't. He accepts it as a powerful hypnotic suggestion mechanism. Let me make this observation. While studying two men independently, both with distinguished credentials, Dr. Wall and Dr. Kroger, while these two men are world apart, searching for an unbiased answer to the question of why acupuncture works, they independently arrive at the same conclusion. They appear to reason as follows. Number one, experimentally, anything that is being done with acupuncture can be precisely duplicated by hypnosis alone. Number two, while to the untrained observer, acupuncture and hypnosis appear to be apparently different skills, yet underneath the drama of the insertion of needles, the same forces are in operation. So they make a conclusion, number three, that inasmuch as the results of acupuncture and the results of hypnosis are comparable, if not identical, they conclude that acupuncture and hypnosis are one and the same thing. Now, what difference does it make what it is? Let me read you a quotation from a worldly point of view. And the man who makes this statement is Dr. Frank Chappell, who is the American Medical Association Science News Editor. "We don't understand it," I quote. "And we don't know anything about it. We know that it exists. And it has for a long time. Acupuncture ranks with other Oriental folklore, but it can't be called medicine. There is a very heavy psychological element in it, possibly involving self-hypnosis." Again, you see the tide of voices and the chorus. "Is there any scientific basis for it? It doesn't really matter. You know, if it helps you with the discomforts of an ailment, you don't give a damn whether it's scientific or not." Close quotes, Dr. Chappell, AMA Science News Editor. What difference does it make? He doesn't care. But now here we are, God's last movement in the world. And our attitude cannot be entirely the pragmatic one that Dr. Chappell brings up. Let's take the Adventist view. The Adventist answer to the question of whether acupuncture is hypnosis is not as simply answered as the world at large. We go beyond the pragmatic question, does it work, to the question, why is it working? What makes it work? As testimonies roll in from everywhere, including the Soviet Union, I have a book, Acupuncture is Going Wild in the Soviet Union, where, by the way, it is classified in the realm of the occult. It's considered an occult phenomena. As testimonies roll in of unquestionable, spectacular, and yet mysterious results that we are to bear in mind, the warnings of Scripture and the spirit of prophecy about last day miracles. These warnings must be carefully considered as we make a judgment. The Bible is clear that on the issue of signs and wonders, our world will make an eternal decision. Now, this is no small matter. It's not a question of who is right and who's wrong. It's a question of heaven or hell. It's just that serious. We ought, therefore, as Adventists, to give anything that borders on the spectacular, especially anything as mysterious, which gives no explanation, not yet, we ought to give it a very prayerful look, don't you think? Wouldn't the spectacular nature, the mysterious nature of this thing cause us to give it a prayerful look? I would say amen to that one, and I think you should too. I'm going to give you my personal conclusion for what it's worth, but I'm going to give it to you only for purpose of establishing a premise. I have arrived at the conclusion that acupuncture is hypnosis. Not by a prejudice or a snap judgment, not even on the testimony of Drs. Wall and Kroger. I find by comparison, as I'm going to endeavor to present to you this evening, that acupuncture is hypnosis in its most powerful and in its most classical form. I'm going to set before you my findings, and I will analyze the situation, let you draw your own conclusions. But I'm telling you, I've drawn mine as of now. Why have I developed a concern for this acupuncture controversy? I can say with all honesty that I wouldn't have any concern at all if it were not for the spirit of prophecy. Like all the rest of the world, I would be thanking God for this boon to suffering humanity. And I would say, it's wonderful. that to the medical profession has been added another marvelous tool into the armamentarium of the healing arts. But when I bring the spirit of prophecy before my eyes and I read the information and I read the counsel and the warnings and I bring them to your attention tonight, that Ellen White, as you will soon see, clearly states that hypnotism behind a false scientific front will become, this is her prediction, will become one of the most deadly and threatening instruments ever to be employed against the conscience of the Christian conscience. Hypnotism is an effective satanic weapon in no matter what form it may occur. It's one of the greatest threats confronting the Adventist Church. Now, this is what I find from the pen of inspiration. I'm going to bring some of these things to your attention, let you evaluate them. The spirit of prophecy position. I have been utterly overwhelmed at the quantity of information that Ellen White gives about hypnosis. Just, I was astonished. I never dreamt it. Ellen White states, this is in the commentary, volume 5, page 1081, that hypnosis was used in the Garden of Eden against Eve and against Christ. I'm going to analyze that for you in a little bit. Satan tempted the first Adam in Eden, and Adam reasoned with the enemy, thus giving him the advantage. There apparently is a point, judging from this statement, at which we must not reason, because we're at a disadvantage. Satan exercised his power of hypnotism over Adam and Eve, and this power he strove to exercise over Christ. But after the word of Scripture was quoted, Satan knew that he had no chance of triumphing. I'm going to come back to all of these ideas before we get through, but I want to bring these to your attention so you will understand the ground on which I'm walking. Hypnotism in the garden, hypnotism against Christ, and that the word of God is our only safety. Let's put that one down. Listen to this. This is in Testimonies, Volume 1. The sciences of phrenology, psychology, and hypnotism. The channel through which Satan comes more directly to this generation and works with that power which is to characterize his efforts near the close of probation. What does that say? It says simply that if we believe that probation is closing, you can look for a growth in the influence of hypnosis. And if that's happening, if it is really happening, then probation is closing. We turn the card over. Now watch the warning in the next paragraph. Satan has come unperceived through these sciences. You don't see him. He's camouflaged. And has poisoned the minds of thousands and had led them to infidelity. He is pleased to have the knowledge of these sciences widespread. It is a plan which he himself has laid that he may gain access to minds and influence them as he pleases. So, at the close of probation, I find here, hypnotism will become a media through which Satan will operate, and that these will come in to the working of the family of God and the family of man through a pseudo-scientific front. If I know how to read English. And if we all believe, as I pray God you do, that Ellen White was the servant of the Lord. Let's go again. Ministry of Healing, 242. Speaking about the mind cure. This method of cure has been believed by persons who were ignorant of its real nature and tendency, and who believed it to be a means of benefit to the sick. But the so-called science is based upon false principles. It is foreign to the nature and spirit of Christ. It does not lead to him who is life and salvation. The one who attracts minds to himself leads them to separate from the true source of their strength. Instead of looking to God, there is a looking to man. Let me tell you that the mind cure is a satanic science. Unless you can see that Satan is the mastermind who has devised this science, it will not be so easy a matter as you suppose to separate from it. Root and branch. The whole philosophy of this science is a masterpiece of satanic deception. Deception? What's that? Get you to believe one thing while something else, the reverse, is true. We are told here in this next statement, we are not to evaluate whether a thing is right or wrong upon the benefits or the results. This comment is one that Ellen White makes regarding that passage in 1 Thessalonians 2:8-9. Even him whose coming is after the working of Satan, with all power and signs and what else? And lying wonders. Now this is her comment on that passage. While it is believed that one human mind so wonderfully affects another, Satan, who is ready to press every advantage, insinuates himself and works on the right hand and on the left. And while those who are devoted to these sciences laud them to the heavens because of their great and good works. Oh, Mr. Hoffman, I've been to an acupuncturist and I'm just feeling like a million. Does that make it right? She says no. They laud them to the heavens because of their great and good works, which they affirm are wrought by them. They little know what a power for evil they are cherishing. But it is a power which will yet work with all signs and lying wonders and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness, and that's the mind cure. Now I have two quotations here that I want to bring to your attention that really, in a sense, narrow down the application of this mind cure and hypnosis, which he's discussing here. In the last days, he said, while appearing to the children of men as the great physician who can heal all their maladies, he will bring disease and disaster until populous cities are reduced to ruin. And that's in Great Controversy 589. Satan's last effort to deceive the world, he will come as the great physician. Why? Satan is a counterfeiter, as we all know. As the Lord Jesus came, he found his way into people's hearts through the relief of pain. There is no way in which gratitude can be so easily engendered as freedom from pain and relief of disease. Does the devil know this? Yes, he does. In his final effort to deceive the world, he'll come as a physician. Let's say it this way. The final effort to deceive the world, Great Controversy 589, Satan will come in the healing arts. Let's put that down. That passage is clear. Another one. You know that Satan will come in to deceive, if possible, the very elect. Now that's Matthew 24:24. Now how is Matthew 24:24 going to be fulfilled? He will deceive, if possible, the very elect. He claims to be Christ. He comes in pretending to be the great medical missionary. The attempt to deceive even the very elect is going to come in the area of healing. That much is extremely clear. And therefore, ladies and gentlemen, when I put two and two together here, and friends, I put two and two together, that there's a rising tide of voices that say that acupuncture is hypnosis, that the dramatic remedy, the dramatic relief that's being experienced in certain spinal problems, in trying to think of some other areas in which it's particularly arthritis,
that testimony comes in, and that there are there is remarkable healing, and as the testimony comes in that this is only hypnosis, and the fact that this is in the healing arts, and that it comes in unperceived through the sciences, my mind is led right down the channel to agree with the spirit of prophecy that we've got to be wary of anything in the healing arts that even remotely resembles hypnosis, because it's a satanic science, and that this can deceive the very elect. We are, as a denomination, on one of the greatest danger points that we've ever known in the history of this work. The devil knows, ladies and gentlemen, and friends and brothers and sisters, that if he can cripple the right arm, he'll destroy the body. Satanic agencies are clothing false theories in an attractive garb, even as Satan in the Garden of Eden concealed his identity from our first parents by speaking to them through the serpent. The hypnotic influence of Satan will rest upon those who turn from the plain word of God to pleasing fables. Innocent though it may appear, the mind cure, if exercised upon the patient, will in its development be for their destruction and not for their restoration. That's medical ministry, page 113 and 14. The sciences which treat of the human mind are very much exalted. Through these sciences, virtue is destroyed and the foundations of spiritualism are laid. Ellen White does not say that hypnosis is spiritualism. She doesn't make them equal to one another, but she makes one the prelude to the other. She says that hypnosis lays the foundation. The last one here from Ellen White about deceiving the very elect. False theories clothed with garments of light. Oh, thank God I finally got rid of that pain. Just one treatment. Marvelous. False theories clothed with garments of light will be presented to God's people. Thus Satan will try to deceive, if possible, the very elect. Most seducing influences will be exerted. Minds will be hypnotized. Testimonies, volume 8, 293. So, the very elect. The deception of Matthew 24 and 24 is tied to hypnosis by the pen of inspiration. That's it. Now I better hurry. What is hypnosis anyway? Certainly, if it is through hypnosis that Satan will deceive, you can't recognize that it is hypnosis unless you know what hypnosis is. Wouldn't that be an elementary bit of premise? It is a false concept. I'm going to point out some of the false concepts and some of the real. It's a false concept to get the idea that the power of hypnosis resides in the hypnotist. It doesn't. It resides in the candidate. The hypnotist may make the suggestion, but the power by which the suggestion is implemented comes from the patient, the candidate, our context you want to see them. Point number two. The thing that we have failed to really come to grips with is the enormous power of one's own mind over one's own body. I want to bring you a statement from Ellen White, and then I want to tell you a couple of stories I don't think you'll ever forget. Ellen White wrote, and it's just, as I've read this statement, I read it again only today, the precision of a lady with four grades of schooling with which she elucidates the function of the human body is just, she had to be inspired. It was a lady who wrote to her and said that she was afraid to take a bath because she thought that if she took a bath, she'd catch cold. This is in Testimonies, Volume 3, page 69 and 70. I read as follows. She wrote to the lady, "If your mind is impressed and fixed that a bath will injure you,
The mental impression is communicated to all the nerves of the body. The nerves control the circulation of the blood. That's a remarkable statement in itself for that time, isn't it? Very true today, we understand. And I'm going to tell you more about that. The nerves control the circulation of the blood. Therefore, the blood is, through the impression of the mind, confined to the blood vessels. That is, causes a stricture. The blood vessels, the blood supply, and the good effect of the bath are lost. All this is because the blood is prevented by the mind and will from flowing readily and from coming to the surface to stimulate, arouse, and promote the circulation. For instance, she says, I'm still quoting Ellen White. For instance, you are impressed that if you bathe, you will become chilly. The brain sends this intelligence to the nerves of the body and the blood vessels, held in obedience to your will, cannot perform their office and cause a reaction after the bath. In other words, she tells the lady, if you believe you'll catch a cold, you will. Now, she recognized, this is psychosomatic medicine. She recognized this. Let me tell you what happened one evening. This was in Tyler, Texas, the early part of my ministry. I'll never forget it. I happened to stumble, inadvertently, into a junior high school auditorium where there was a hypnotist who was performing parlor games, you might say, with people who would volunteer. I arrived at the time that he asked for volunteers to come up from the audience, and there were about 15 people came up. He hypnotized them all simultaneously. If you don't believe in mass hypnotism, I do. After he had gone through his rituals, it only took just a little bit. I mean, it wasn't complicated at all. Very simple. He went down the line of the 15, and there were five of them that were not hypnotized. And he sent them from the platform. He could just spot them just like that. Well, he played some games with some of them, but then he had a man remove his coat, roll up his sleeve, and extend his arm. I was close. I could see what was going on. He had the man extend his arm. I looked at the man's arm, perfectly normal arm, pink in normal flesh color, common to us all. The man was under hypnosis. He said to the man, I'm going to touch the tip of my finger to the tip of your finger. And as my finger comes down your arm, the blood will leave your hand. The blood will leave your arm as my hand comes down your arm. So the man extended his arm. I looked at it. Sleeve was rolled up. Touched the man's hand like this. Started down. And everything beyond the point of contact was white as snow. It was whiter than it was whiter than any corpse I've ever seen. Absolutely colorless. From the point of the contact of the finger on down, the man had normal circulation, apparently. I tell you this story not to amuse you, but to underscore that when Ellen White said that the mind, to the nerves, controls the blood vessels, then this isn't beyond the scope of reason, even though it's quite spectacular. And I'm going to come back to this point to tell you a story before we leave that is incredible but true. And I have it. I have a medical journal here. I'm going to read it out of. The thing that we've got to establish is that there's a marvelous power of one's own mind over one's own body. Let's talk a little bit about mass hypnotism. And I'm only going to touch on this because I want you to be aware of it. When Adolf Hitler first ran for office, he got 12,000 votes. 2 years later, he got 12 million votes. There were 1 million people at the rally at Nuremberg where Hitler really launched his power base. He hypnotized everybody there. What is essential to a hypnotist? It is essential, number one, to have a strong authority figure, and number two, a highly motivated candidate. With the aftermath of World War I and the poverty and the injustices of the Versailles Treaty, the German people were highly motivated. They were looking for a way out of that slough. And what you have in Nazi Germany is a case of national hypnotism. Absolutely. Let me give you another mass hypnotism. It's called China. Jerry Pettus, our representative in Congress from somewhere down in California,
made a trip, as you may have read in the Review and Herald, to China. And he reported reported his findings. It used to be, you know, that in Shanghai was a den of thieves. If you owned something, you nailed it down, then you stood and watched it. And Jerry Pettis tells that you can put your little bicycle, lean it up against a wall, and come back 2 weeks later, it'll be there. So it's a marvelous change. Shanghai is clean. Shanghai is honest. Why? Is it because China has suddenly accepted a code of Puritan Christian ethics? Not at all. It is not a question of not stealing. It's a question that as they go around reinforcing the hypnotic suggestions of Mao with a little red book in their hand, it is a fact that they cannot steal the bicycle. The will to take or not to take is not their own. It's the will of Chairman Mao. Have you thought about that one? This is the reason why, as far as acupuncture is concerned, that acupuncture works with about 90% of the Chinese. Because they're already hypnotized. Let me tell you another little story. What time is it? Tell you another little story. A history professor, whose clippings I have with me, up in the state of Washington, was teaching European history in the period of the Nazi regime, and he showed a picture of Adolf Hitler speaking to the Great Assembly at Nuremberg. The professor said, and it's a newspaper item, he said, "I didn't watch the movie." He said, "I sat with my back to the screen and watched my history class. I watched the reactions." Hitler's been dead for 30 years. But he said, at the end of the class and at the end of the film, he said, "I have 45 Nazis on my hands." And let me tell you, young people that are here, some of the mechanism of hypnosis that I have read, one of them is rhythm, the metronome. Anything that's fatiguing that you get tired of is a help to induce hypnosis. And then if a candidate cannot be induced by normal processes, all you have to do is take a xenon light and keep flashing it at him. In other words, you take this blinding light along with a rock, and you know what you have? Young people, if you will allow yourself to be hypnotized by a rock, that's exactly what happens. And then they turn on these lights, and you don't have a chance if you're willing to go on a dance floor like that. And if you wonder why they act like a bunch of zombies, that's it. They are zombies. They've lost their minds. And it's so easily done. Let me tell you something here. Dr. Kroger says on his... And this is an article that I picked up from the Journal of the American Medical Association, February 13, 1960. I read as follows. "Actually, the subject of a stage hypnotist is hypnotized the moment he volunteers because of their expected attitude." It's just that easy. There's another thing that I must bring to your attention. The average individual thinks about hypnosis as a deep sleep, and it's not. It's not a sleep at all. Reading again from Dr. Kroger, "The most common misconception is that hypnosis is sleep. Many deeply hypnotized subjects state, 'Doctor, I am sure I was not hypnotized. I heard everything you said.' Therefore, all subjects must be told that they will be more or less acutely aware." There is a heightening of an awareness. Not a less aware, but more aware. "There are many people," and I'm quoting Dr. Kroger again, "there are many people who will not believe that an individual is hypnotized if they don't have their eyes closed." But they don't even have to close their eyes. Eve didn't have her eyes closed. "Even the most respectable scientists in the Western and Occidental world are aware that acupunctural analgesia is largely a type of suggestion and auto-hypnosis. Is either because they're not familiar with the basic principles of waking hypnotism, or they adhere to the commonly held belief that a formal induction technique is always required to produce phenomenological results. So-called trance, sleep states, or unconscious are not related to hypnosis."
And then his statement, unsophisticated observers often will not believe that a patient is hypnotized because he has his eyes open. You never even have to close your eyes, he says. Not at all. So these are ideas that we must recognize. Now, I want to turn to a book. Don't go away. I'll be right back. I have your book, written by Dr. Floyd Rook. He's chairman of the Department of Psychology, University of California. This is a commonly used book on, it's called Psychology and Life. And I'd like to read just a little bit in terms of the technique of inducing hypnosis, and then we're going to go back to the Garden of Eden again. There's nothing mysterious about hypnosis. It's simply a highly suggestible state into which a willing subject is induced by a skilled operator. The subject becomes willing to concentrate exclusively on the situations, actual or symbolic, presented by the hypnotist. Now hear this. Adequate motivation and respect for the hypnotist are usually contributing factors. In other words, you need a strong authority figure. You need a highly motivated individual. The operator, speaking in a monotonous tone to induce complete relaxation, may start by asking the subject to execute some simple act, such as lying down on a couch. Then the subject is told something which is obviously true. That's number one. Perhaps that the room is quiet or that the lights are low. His confidence is won. The subject is told a partial truth next. Partial truth. And is asked to execute acts which are only slightly out of the ordinary. For instance, he's told that his eyes burn and that his eyelids feel heavy. In a greater state of suggestibility, the subject may be led to believe the obviously untrue. So, from the true to the partially true to the absolutely false. Dr. Floyd Rook. When Ellen White said that it was hypnosis in the Garden of Eden, you can go back there and trace the steps. Yea, hath God said? Was that true? Yes, it was true. God had said. And then the insinuation of doubt. Yea, hath God said? And then the untrue. You shall not surely die. 1, 2, 3. But there's also another element here. And that is an attention mechanism. The ordinary hypnotist will say, look me in the eye. Gaze into my eyes. Look deep into my eyes. Well, his eyes have nothing to do with it. It's just to fix the attention. Or look at my watch fob. Or hold out your finger. And look at the end of your finger. Now, what was the attention mechanism in the Garden of Eden? It was a talking snake. A very forceful attention mechanism, right? So, when Ellen White didn't miss a turn, absolutely, it's absolutely a classical hypnotic session. Now let's go over to the temptation of Jesus, shall we? If thou be the Son of God, was he the Son of God? That's true. If thou be the Son of God, the insinuation of doubt. If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread. What was the attention mechanism? The attention mechanism was a stone. Look at this stone. Consider this stone to be bread. Now, in America, we bake our bread in pans, and it has a regular shape. But the bread out there was barley bread, and it was just a blob. And when Satan picked up a stone and held it out, it was gray like barley bread. And he said to Christ, consider this stone as a piece of bread. This is a suggestive mechanism. Powerful. But the Lord said, man shall not live by what? By bread alone. It was with the word of God that he defeated the enemy, for the enemy tried to hypnotize him. He said, consider this stone to be bread. And that was an insinuation. That was an attention mechanism. But it didn't work. In reading over Kroger's material regarding the techniques of hypnosis, let me make this suggestion to you. I've read you what Floyd Rook said. And now, let's talk about Kroger. Kroger says there is suggestion, there is direction, and there is misdirection. I was intrigued by the idea of misdirection. I never heard the word before. As near as I can tell, the idea of misdirection is pretty much the idea of mislead. Letting an individual draw for himself an erroneous conclusion. Let's go back to the Garden of Eden. Eve saw the serpent was eating of the fruit, right? And she, seeing that the fruit was good to eat, and that it was desirable to make one wise. Now that was misdirection. The misdirection was to give the impression that the eating of the fruit had something to do with giving the serpent the power of speech. And it didn't have anything to do at all. It was only her conclusion. This is absolute misdirection. This is what Kroger's bringing out. Misdirection. Now let's come down here to back to the temptation of Christ again. Consider this stone as a loaf of bread. It's a misdirection to create a false concept. Now listen to this. I said a moment ago that acupuncture is classical hypnosis. Why? I'm ready to draw a conclusion. I'll let you know why I've arrived at these decisions. Not because Kroger says so. Not because Dr. Wall of London says so. But on the basis of just simple analysis. The patient is led to believe that the insertion of the needle has something to do with their getting well. And that is absolutely not true. It is absolutely a misdirection. It's as much a misdirection as saying that the talking serpent could talk because he ate the fruit. It's classical hypnosis. Well, we've applied these facts that we've learned, and now I want to close. Honest efforts are being made by honest men to find some kind of viable scientific reasons for our support for acupuncture. For example, a patient walks in and they say nothing to the patient at all. She walks in, sits down, the doctor comes in, puts in a needle or two, says nothing. In other words, let's not make any suggestions whatsoever. Let's have an absolutely sterile environment. I want you to listen to this. A sterile environment doesn't exist anymore. We have been bombarded by too much of the media. Until the state of expectancy and the hope is heightened by the insertion of the needle without any words at all. In harmony with Kroger's statement that the individual who walks out in response to a call of a hypnotist, that the moment they are motivated to come, they're already in a state of hypnosis. Because they're highly motivated. Watch this again. I shouldn't say watch this. I haven't said this before. In all of American society, the most respected authority figure is a medical doctor. And the most highly motivated individual is the person who's sick. Who's in pain, who wants to get well, and with the consciousness that they may die unless they do get a cure, and with the specter of death knocking at the door, there you do have a highly motivated individual. So with a highly motivated individual presenting himself to the most authoritative figure in American society, you have an ease of hypnosis available like no other situation in anybody's life. Now that is exactly Kroger's position. He says the twirling in of the needles only increased the suggestibility and the dramatic display of the mannequin and where the needles ought to go and what they're supposed to do, that the individual expects it to happen. It's a programmed kind of faith. But all things being equal, that the individual would get exactly the same result if they were conditioned to a tap by the index finger in the middle of the forehead. But behind a plausible scientific front, which Ellen White warns against, that Satan will come in behind these plausible sciences to deceive, if possible, the very elect. And these are the things that I see. Now there's something else here. And this is perhaps the most interesting of all before I... And I hope you folk don't have anything else to do anyway. I want to tell you the most fascinating thing that I've come across in a long time. See if I brought it up here with me. See if I did. I did. I've had folks say to me, well, but look, Brother Hoffman, this can't be hypnosis. It works on unconscious people. Therefore, it can't be hypnosis. Here's a man who's totally unconscious. You put a needle, you get a result. Now listen to this. This is the wildest thing. And it opens up a whole new vista of thinking. I'm reading now from Medical Dimensions. This is January 74. This is not ancient history. This thing is moving. I think perhaps in the economy of time, I should just read it to you. June. This is a woman's name. A 37-year-old mother of three is in a large city hospital about to have a hysterectomy. Once the general anesthesia has taken effect, now this is just ordinary chemo anesthesia. Once the general anesthesia has taken effect, the surgeon and the anesthesiologist continue to talk to the sleeping patient, not about her. They even address her by her first name. All right, June, we're ready now to make the incision. This is really very simple. The tone of their voices is calm and quiet and assuring. They are careful to make positive rather than negative assessments of the surgical progress. Once they have the abdomen open, instead of commenting on this mess, they remark, we should have taken care of this earlier, but everything is going to be all right. Later, when the operation is over and the incision has been closed, June is told that she will be moved to a carriage and then to a bed in the recovery room. There, in the recovery room, still deep in anesthetic sleep, she is spoken to again. Hello, June. This is your doctor. Your operation was a success, and you are now resting comfortably in the recovery room. Soon you'll wake up feeling thirsty and hungry. There will be a little discomfort in the incision area, but no bleeding. There will be no nausea or gas. You will have no difficulty with your body eliminations. You will feel strong and eager to move about. Very soon you'll be back home with your family. This sounds like hypnosis. And it is. The individual under chemical anesthesia is hypnosuggestible. Because the same patient, after she's back home and she's feeling well, they can bring her in and hypnotize her, and she can tell them everything that was said at the operating table. Will an individual who is totally unconscious respond to acupuncture? Yes. But you can't hypnotize an unconscious person? Yes, you can. Absolutely. And consequently, there are many major hospitals that are advocating operating room silence or a positive atmosphere of you're going to be just fine. Interesting? But we're learning something about the human mind. Perfectly compatible with the spirit of prophecy. You see what I mean? I'm going to make a bit of an extrapolation that as time goes on, I don't have the slightest question that a highly plausible, elaborate scientific explanation of why acupuncture works is going to develop. But it's going to be a phony. It's going to be bought by the average person. If it were possible, it will fool the very elect. If it were not highly plausible under a false science, quote Ellen White, it wouldn't fool anybody. There's a statement in Great Controversy that says that many undeniable wonders will be performed. Did you ever read that one? I want to tell you this story here in closing. Here is the experience of a man with terminal cancer. They did an exploratory on the man. They found him just full of cancer, as we say, and they just sewed him back up. There was nothing to be done. Well, this man, because of his increasing pain, went to a hypnotist. Not just an ordinary hypnotist, a psychiatrist. And asked for relief from pain by hypnosis because he did not wish to get addicted to drugs and that would only compound the problem. So he went to the psychiatrist and the psychiatrist hypnotized him and said, John, you will experience no pain. And for a week, John had no pain because the nerve mechanisms were all open through the will of the mind, John's mind, not the mind of the hypnotist. And he didn't feel any pain. But he had to go back for another suggestion. He had responded so remarkably to pain relief suggestions that his doctor decided that he would take a page from the loose leaf notebook of the dentist. You know, under hypnosis, the dentist can pull your tooth, and if you bleed, he can say, now you stop bleeding, and you stop. Does it work? Of course it works. Ellen White would reaffirm that. Close off the blood vessels, of course. So he took a leaf, the psychiatrist did, he took a leaf from the page, from the book of the dentist. The man had a cancer of the lower bowel, and he was bleeding quite a bit. So the next time the man came in, under hypnosis, the man was told, now, John, you'll stop bleeding. He came back a week later. He said, I haven't bled a drop. Why? Because his own mind had told his own blood vessels to close off the blood supply to the lower bowel, and he wasn't bleeding. It's like that. Now everybody was really excited about what was happening to this man. As a further experiment, under hypnosis, the doctor commanded this man. He said, John, you will close off all blood supply to every tumor in your body. Every malignant tumor. The idea was that a tumor, in order to grow, must have a blood supply, and so let's just starve the things to death. So he said, John, you stop supplying blood to the tumors. In 3 weeks' time, the man was back on his job. Unfortunately, the man was killed in an automobile accident. After his death in the automobile accident, his body was rushed in for autopsy in view of what had happened. When his body was opened, every metastasis of the cancer was gone. And the main body of the cancer that had been the primary source was so shrunken up that it was no longer a threat to life. Is hypnosis a cure for cancer? This would seem to indicate that there is potential. Now let me ask you, and this is where men's souls will be tried. Let's say that you know that you are a terminal cancer patient. And if others are receiving a benefit through acupunctural hypnosis, are you going in? Can you see the enormity of this matter? There are many who shrink with horror from the thought of consulting a spirit medium, but who are attracted by the more pleasing forms of spiritism. Others are led astray by the teachings of Christian Science, which is hypnosis. Catherine Kuhlman is a hypnotist. She is a combination of a spiritist and a hypnotist. Her spiritism tells her that the little lady on the third row with the red hat has such and such a disease. And because the woman has confidence in Catherine Kuhlman, Catherine Kuhlman says, when you leave here tonight and go out the aisle, you be pain-free, and pain-free she is. Others are led astray by the teachings of Christian Science and by the mysticism of theosophy and other oriental religions. The apostles of nearly all forms of spiritism claim to have the power to heal. Oriental religion, spiritism, one paragraph after the other, and that is in Prophets and Kings, page 210 and 11. We have knocking at the doors of the Adventist church an Oriental stranger with a form of healing. Shall we or shall we not open the door on this question? A great deal depends, as we see it tonight. And what's wrong with all of it? I close by telling you this. The Lord Jesus Christ died upon the cross to provide man with a free moral choice. For us to surrender our will and allow somebody else to dictate directly, bypassing the conscious choice, to allow ourselves to be dictated to into the unconscious without the control of our will, to give away to any man that which Christ died to provide, is a sin against the blood of the cross. And that's the moral implication to it all. Shall we pray?